Senate Consumer Affairs and open up a public hearing on both Senate Bills 1089 and 1263. And our two distinguished guests here, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, State Senator from District 21, and the sponsor for constituent of Senate Bill 1089. Excuse me, 1253.
Sorry, Roger.
So I'm the State Senator from the District 11, which is a question area.
Okay, thank you. Who wants to go first here?
I guess.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the reason this is in front of you is a few sessions ago we passed a bill, which I think was a very good bill, that set up a protection program for dry cleaners in dealing with the potential ground pollution and chemicals that they use. That system set up through DEQ has a funding structure that was intended to raise about $1 million a biennium that has not been attaining that level, as I understand it, and I'm working with Sid Lichen, who's a one of my constituents and owns a number of dry cleaning stations. He had proposed a change to that structure for the legislature to consider, and I'm not going to try to explain the details of that. I'll let Sid do that one, and I believe that it also has some interest of a number of Senator Lim's constituents. You also have the other bill in front of you, which is, frankly, another potential solution to that problem, and I'll let Mr. Martin address that one. But after Mr. Lindsay, if we could invite up the people that actually know about this, that probably would be helpful.
The real experts. Hey, welcome, Senator Lynn. Please introduce yourself.
Well, as I already mentioned, my name is John Lynn, State Senator from the Recreation Area, and and the members, it is my great honor that is present here today to discuss the issue of concerning the dry cleaner. I'm here to support the Senator Byers, proposal of Senate Bill 1089.
A little trouble with those numbers.
And as I read, I come to a conclusion that I support the 1263, which seems more fair and equitable, and also as I read the 1089, that bill has a more strong impact on the small dry cleaners. I don't want to be redundant or explain which will be followed fairly soon, but as I read the 1089, and when they collect supposed to collect $1 million or more in a year, if they shortfall such as a $300,000 whatever amount, then the balance should be divided equally with all members, whether it's big or small. And also that the $10,000 that they have to come up in case they are sighted contaminated. So I think that amount seems like that's too much because of that reason. I'm going to oppose the 1089, even though with a good intention has been written. At the same time, 1263 looks like a more equitable legislation. As you can see in the back, there are a lot of the Asian American that the clients in here with us today. Most of them are first-time immigrants and first-generation. They are small businessmen and are working from morning to in the evening, Monday through Saturday, and a good family man that they're paying for education for their children, and they are the engines and the backbones of the community. And they're in here seeing the president of Korean American Dry Cleaners Association, Chamber of the Korean American Chamber of Commerce, and plus many other community leaders are present today. They will tell their story, what they are about, and with fair process and hearing, I'm sure we will come up reasonably fair bill in the future. That is my short and fast assessment.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Any questions?
Thank you. If I could, sure. I'd like to invite up Sid Lichen to join us. He's the author.
Sure.
One day I can join us, Sid.
Okay. I think I'm going to go back there.
that has a distinction. His grandfather served in this chamber for a number of years back in the 60s and 70s, so he should be a pro to this process. He also should be fairly pro to the protocols because he's a Springfield City Councilor besides being a business person who owns a number of dry cleaning establishments. So with that, I'll really put him on the spot.
Welcome, Sid. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Sid Liking, and the kind of irony about the whole thing is my grandfather served with Roger Martin. So, but I know that they've been good friends for a long time, so this is kind of interesting, to say the least. Just to give you a brief history, if I can, on the current bill right now, the current law, in my view, and the view I think of most cleaners around the state, it's a very good program. Very good. I think if you were to ask cleaners around the state, they would endorse it. Very highly. The problem that we've had is the shortfall of the of what's written in the law, trying to achieve that $1 million. And last year it was rounding off, I think it's about 750,000. So we did have a shortfall there. What it's based on is based on raising money through a tax on the solvents that we use. The main solvent is what's called perchloroethylene, and I'll just shorten it to perch because I have a hard time saying it myself. And another type of solvent, a petroleum-based solvent, or better known as synthetic hydrocarbon. The most common brand name would be BF2000 manufactured by Exxon. The probably one of the bigger problems we're having, why we're having a shortfall, has to do with how the dry cleaning industry has become more efficient. It's become much more efficient with the manufacturing and the selling of what we call fourth and fifth generation dry cleaning machines. An example is if you had a second generation machine or so, or first generation machine, say 10 years ago, you were purchasing, you know, just a figure, 200 gallons of a perk. And today, with these newer machines, it would be knocked down to 50 gallons. So therefore, you're not going to purchase as much of the solvent. You're not going to raise the money to the tax. Right now, the way the law is written is that there's a couple of triggers. Through January, it's increased by approximately 3%. October, it's increased by $4. Now, there's no cap. It just keeps increasing. The beginning is the tax is $12 per gallon. That's where it was written with those triggers. When it raised under $500,000, those triggers went into effect. Currently, it's at $17.11 a gallon, I believe is the number. And by October, slated to hit 21. Now, with the new regulations put on our suppliers, okay, with what we call a closed-loop delivery system, the price of perk today is $10 per gallon without the tax. When you come to October, that price including tax will be close to $31. We're still not achieving the $1 million fund. Okay, the reason why I brought forth this proposal is a little bit of research on my own through discussions I've had with members of the Southeastern Fabricator Association. And there's a law in Florida currently in place, and which has this 2%, they call it a gross receipts tax, I'm calling it an environmental fee. And I guess, you know, we can use any terminology we want, but we know what it is.
It's a charge.
It's a charge. And through my conversations with those back at the Southeast Fabricator Association, that they have so far raised $15 million. Now there's much more cleaners. There's approximately between 1,500 and 2,000 cleaners back in Florida. So the number is much higher than Oregon. Oregon, you're looking at approximately 350. But the interesting thing is that even if you divide that by four, and I mean, it almost seems like we could raise somewhere between $3 and $4 million, which I don't think will happen because the size of the cleaners in Florida are larger anyway, on an average. But the thing is the according to some of the conversations I've had with leadership from the ODCA leadership from PATH this last year, is that In Oregon, the revenues from dry cleaners is approximately between $52 and $60 million generated. That's what business is generated. The simple mathematics, 2%, you can generate anywhere from $1,040,000 to $1.2 million. That would achieve that goal. I'm proposing this from an interesting perspective. I have four stores. What I'm paying now is substantially less than what we would be paying with the 2%. So this will actually hit me at a higher amount. I also, in the state, introduced a type of cleaning that's actually what came from Europe, what's called what they call today professional wet cleaning, using water in your systems instead of solvent. And I've been using that for 3.5, nearly 4 years. So I've actually gone to a quote-unquote environmental perspective of it as well, and where I don't use the solvent and according as much. And so with the bill that's in place now, 3216, I'm even using less, and I'm even paying less. So once again, the 2% isn't about me. It isn't about those other cleaners that are larger that can afford it. The 2% is about the industry. It's about this program that is important. It has to be in place because it gives us that immunity. And it's there's a friend of mine in Eugene, for an example, who had to do a cleanup before this program was in place. And it was a substantial amount of money. Now, he was in a good position where he was very close with those that owned the shopping center, and they were able to foot a large amount of the bill. So otherwise, he'd have been bankrupt, out of business, and lost everything. And the last thing we need to see is cleaners in the state going bankrupt because of regulations that are in place. So in conclusion, I just want to state that I'm very supportive of this. And even though from my perspective, it's going to cost me more, but that's okay. That's okay because of the fact I think it's important to save the industry. I think it's important to be in a position where we can protect all, whether they do $70,000 a year or $1 million a year in business. And speaking to my father Pete Lykin is a past president of the Oregon State Home Builders Association, and I spoke to him about permits on homes. And it's really interesting to note that whether you have if you have a 1,500 square foot home and you go to apply for a permit, or a 4,000 square foot home, a 4,000 square foot home's permits can be more. And the same as bank fees, the same as other industries. The fact is, the little guy's not going to pay as much as the larger operator in all sorts of industries. And I think those of us that are in any sort of leadership or have been successful, I think it's up to us to pave the way and to make sure that those who are trying and working hard don't go out of business because of the regulations that have been put in place. Thank you very much.
Questions?
How much money has been collected since the 95 law? Do you know how much totally has been collected over this period of time?
We got the book right here.
While you're looking it up, along with that, my next question would be, how many times has the fund been used and how much we have in the fund now?
Well, let me answer the first question. From the 95 to 96, the actual was just under 410,000. 96 to 97 was about 707,000. This last time around, 298, 773,000. So each year, quite a bit short. The answer to the aqua cleanup, which been used, I don't have that answer. That's at least with me, that would be DEQ, but obviously had that answer. I think it was somewhere around 13, but I may be incorrect, so I'm sure somebody will correct me.
We have a DEQ person.
Okay. All right. And then just the last question, how much is in the fund now?
Well, as of this last, according with the information we received, it was this last amount was, the unallocated fund total was, we have $1,175,000. That's what's according to the, from the DEQ. And that's the total amount that's in there now. but we still have not been able to raise $1 million a year.
Was there some magic in trying to raise $1 million a year? What was that based on?
That was what was written. What was written in the law. And that was, I guess that's another question we had, is that, you know, why the magical amount? And I'm just going to say that's another thing I'm sure you can answer as well. So
we'll ask those questions then. Further questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Very well. Roger Martin. There he isn't. Oh, yeah. Yeah, very sure. Yeah. That's a different question. There he is. Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am not Mary Wallace. My name is Lori Ahn, and I'm assistant to the director for the Department of Environmental Quality. Mary Wall had expected to be here, and her name is on the testimony, but she's unable to be here. So I will provide some background information and try to give you some answers to some of the questions you may have. She is much more familiar with this program. What's being handed out is our written testimony, as well as a copy of our report to the legislature on this program. This report was done earlier this year, and it does have a lot of good information. I'm going to provide just a little bit of background on Senate Bill 1089 and Senate Bill 1263, which do propose changes in fees paid by dry cleaners to meet the revenue requirements of Oregon's dry cleaner law. And as you've heard, that law does require dry cleaners to pay fees to fund the environmental response account for cleaning up contaminated sites. And as you've also heard, if those fees are paid, there's a relief from liability under Oregon law. So this is an ongoing insurance pool. And we believe that during the first 3.5 years, this program has demonstrated success because of the waste minimization and good management practices that are in the law. We've seen the risk of future contamination at dry cleaner sites reduced. It has also been successful in addressing contamination by starting cleanups at 13 sites. And there are 2 additional sites that have applied for funding. So right now, under this program, there are about 15 sites working. We understand that the program has made it easier for dry cleaners to obtain lease agreements and property transactions. I think that the high points I'd want to hit, because there's a lot of folks here to testify, are that this is an innovative program that should be continued, but that the funding is something that needs to be looked at and fixed in a way that works for everybody. The funding mechanism for the insurance pool is not enough. It was originally based on tiered levels, looking at protecting small businesses in that tiering. It did create a fee on solvents to create the environmental incentive to reduce solvent use. And, of course, you've heard already that that has occurred, that solvent use is less. This is positive, but, of course, it does raise issues about the funding. And we believe the insurance pool does need to be at least $1 million a year. There are some cleanups that were started that we're having trouble finishing because of the funding. And one other point is that the dry cleaner cost, the average per dry cleaner cost in Oregon is about $2,000 annually. And for other states, per dry cleaner cost in similar programs is about $4,000. I would point out that in the report, there's some tables of information. On page 13, there's a list of the ongoing projects. There's a table of the status of dry cleaner cleanups. On page 15, there's a table of projected revenue and expenses. I would note that because revenues have been less than projected, DEQ did reduce costs to administer the program by 17% to 30% below the amount budgeted. And the result of that was there was an inability to do as much technical assistance and oversight than we had originally thought. And currently, the projected cost of cleaning up all sites that have applied for funding is about $1.8 million. And the account right now has about $1.2 million available. And there's a table 4 on page 17 has a account information. And with that, I'll stop, and if there are questions that I can't answer, I will. If I have to bring that information back, I will also do that.
Sorry, that's good. Have your questions been answered?
Well, I just one that you represent today, the DEQ. You mentioned in your testimony, or Mary's original testimony, that 85% of dry cleaners use perchloroethylene, and that's the major reason for the program, but there are all alternatives out there. You also mentioned that, she mentioned, that this has been an important incentive to limit solvent use. So if we are changing this mechanism, that would seem to fly in the face of that particular argument. And secondly, so I appreciate your comment on that. And also, secondly, then, what progress are we making, since the whole thing is caused by this one chemical, to using some of those alternative chemicals for future cleanups? And from this point on, obviously, it won't affect the ones that are in the ground now.
Right, Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, I think that, you know, as we've heard people testify, they are reducing their use of solvents. So I think the incentive has worked, just partly because of the cost and partly because of the environmental cleanup. And that's probably one reason to take a look at what's going to work for funding, if that incentive indeed then results in, you know, funding going down. I'm not familiar with what specific alternatives there might be. I can certainly get that information provided.
Mary Wall's written testimony indicates that plug and dry cleaners are paying an average of about $2,000 per year, and typical fees in other states would be $4,000. And if you had 350 active dry cleaners and 100 dry stores, the result of anything we do to try to get this money is going to be an increase in fees. And that's basically what you're telling us.
I believe, Mr. Chair, I believe that's something that, you know, might be necessary to fund the program. But we're certainly willing to sit down with folks and talk about how this could work.
Further questions? Senator Miller.
Thank you. Picking up on something Senator Metzger said, asking about how much you had in the fund. Do you know what the balance is currently?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, the testimony indicated, or the report that was done a couple months earlier this year, indicated there was about $1.2 million.
And you indicated that there are projects you're not able to take care of right now because what?
And Senator Nelson, Senator Miller, that currently the amount of cost projected to clean up all the sites that have applied for funding is less than what's in the account. Yes, I'm sorry. More cleanup, projected cleanup costs than the account has.
But the account continues to replenish itself, correct? Even forecasting what you anticipate receiving will not cover the cost of the cleanup?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, on page 15, there's some projected revenues. We don't have page 15 of the report. We don't have final actual numbers for 98-99. That's something that we can, you know, hopefully get, find out where the information is. But basically what happens every year is that the actual revenues are lower than projected. So it's kind of running behind.
But you're suggesting that your forecasts are that you won't have enough. Is that what I'm hearing? Right now you've got over $1 million in the till, but you say that's not enough to cover our projected cost.
Mr. Chairman Miller, right. We have trouble currently right now with some of the cleanups, and I can get more information and provide which ones those are, but there are insufficient funds to complete all those. And in fact, there are some cleanups for dry cleaner sites that we're using orphan site money for because the cost is so high, and there's no dry cleaner funds available for that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I might continue. Does the individual dry cleaner who is responsible for the problem, do they hire the people to do the cleanup, or does DEQ come in and take over the operation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, I apologize for not being able to answer that, but I can find out.
If I can just observe from some experiences that DEQ would not, in my some understanding, be concerned at all about the cost. Not so much as the impact of dry cleaner. nor are they concerned in experiences I'm aware of with the reasonableness of the cleanup effort. And when cost is not an issue, it's an easy way to drain the funds. And I'm uncomfortable with the fact that, and I don't know whether the individual dry cleaner, in fact, even in those situations, some of the requirements imposed by DEQ. Another situation, I don't know if beans about dry cleaning other than I pick up myself there. But things that are imposed upon businesses to cooperate with the DEQ, I think, in many instances, are excessive and expensive.
Senator Meyer.
Senator Moore, actually, started going down the line. It's just an issue of, you know, the $1 million a year. At what point do we have enough? Is there a way to sort of fill a lasso around, you know, how much is that future liability? I mean, I was talking with someone yesterday, we were talking about, is there a way to insure against this? Maybe something to get the liability. But again, it's hard to get a handle on that unless you know what the potential liability is. Is there more? I mean, have you discovered all of the sites? Are there more to come?
Mr. Chair and Senator Byer, there are about 35 other sites that we're aware of that have potential contamination that we haven't really been able to get to yet. So there's certainly a potential pool of more sites out there. We don't have a good handle on how many there are that might be contaminated, but we do know of 35 that could potentially be. That work has not been really done.
Correct. The strength of the program, as I understand it, from the dry cleaners' perspective, is they are literally protected against litigation and responsibility for the cleanup. That's by paying the tax, the state has taken on that responsibility.
Mr. Chair and Senator Byer, I can certainly let the dry cleaner representative speak to their position on that. But
that's
the intent was to create an insurance pool to provide cost to clean up these, and as a result of this program's liability would be released.
I think to Mr. Chair, as I said to Senator Miller's comments, they may not be all that excited about cost containment either, since they have no liability.
So we have, we're saying there's 350 dry cleaning sites and 100 dry sites. Is that a fair representation, or is that something I should ask somebody else?
No.
I guess I don't know the difference between the two. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know
the answer. Sure. A site is a place where there is no actual cleaning on site. It's a place that collects your laundry that you drop off, send it out somewhere else to do it, and then bring it back, and you pick it up, your things. So the dry store does not actually have solvent on site.
Okay.
However, it does contribute to the use of solvent.
Okay. But that's not a specific site. Any further questions?
I have one. Mr. Chair, just looking through the recommendations of the report that we were just given, one of the recommendations in the back is on environmental compliance, and suggested with the fund that some provisions need to be made that if we're going to spend monies to clean up environmental issues, that that owner be in current compliance so that they don't become recontaminated again after the cleanup. Is there anything in these legislations that fulfills that recommendation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I don't believe so. I don't believe that's addressed.
Senator, former Senator Horton was nodding his head. Maybe he could answer that.
And just before we go, any further questions along?
No.
Okay. Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I am the lobbyist for the Oregon Dry Cleaners Association. I am also the chairman of the advisory committee that the DEQ set up to administer or to advise the DEQ on this legislation. I've served on that committee since its inception in 1996. My role today is not so much to talk about the two bills as to try to give you a background so you understand what the problems are. First of all, this is a success story, and I think it's important to understand that. In 1995, a certain number of the dry cleaners, realizing that on a national basis it was being identified that many dry cleaning facilities and locations were contaminated, came to the legislature. They weren't driven here by the DEQ. In fact, they were resisted by the DEQ with an idea. And the idea was, look, most dry cleaners are about $100,000, $200,000 enterprises. And if you bring a $1 million cleanup suit against them. They will do exactly what taverns did 15 years ago when we lost insurance. They'll go broke. So we won't clean the site up because they'll be out of business. They'll be bankrupt. So let's find a practical way to address this problem. And we passed the law, thanks in great part to your colleague, Senator Hannon, who sat through endless arguments in the legislative council office as we hammered this out with Mary Wall. And the DEQ naturally did not want to go away from the general liability law that exists for everyone else. And what this law does do is if you are an active member and you pay your $1,000 as a dry cleaner and you either are or attempt to pay the taxes on a gallon, if you are an active member and you are not liable as any other business is for spills on your property. I think it's very important you understand that all the dry cleaners in the state got a tremendous lifting of potential liability through this. The law sets up several programs administered by the DEQ, and one of them was to go out and start immediately, and they've already done this, establishing standards for all dry cleaners in the state so future spills would be averted. And you will hear from people that are in the business, and there's a number of people here who have been long-time members of the business, so it's a very technical stuff. You really ought to ask the dry cleaners. And Steve Young, who's the president of the Dry Cleaners Association, is one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever been around on this business. He's very candid. He'll tell you what works and what doesn't. One of the things, and Sid Lycan mentioned, he's exactly correct. PERC, which is has been for years the standard dry cleaning solvent used, was for many years, like many other chemicals, had no known problems with it. That was before we discovered that it did have problems. PERC is an unusual kind of a liquid in that it will go through anything, including concrete. So if you have a dry cleaning establishment and you have a concrete floor, most people think, well, gee, I can't contaminate the ground. That's not right, because PERC will go straight through concrete and into the soil underneath. And so literally any place that's been in the dry cleaning business for any number of years is probably contaminated. Now, the law set up a procedure where after you belong, you can come and say, I think I've got a problem with my property. This often happens when there's a change, a dry cleaner in a shopping center, and the shopping center wants to sell. They start evaluating all of the potential hazards, and someone will come forward and say, will you check me out? And the majority of the people that are on this list that have been checked so far are people that said, I think I've got a spill, or the DEQ had already identified that there was a spill, and they've entered into the program. The DEQ, I back up for a minute, has gone through the state and done the very best job they could to communicate with all the dry cleaners, to tell them the safety things that ought to be done. They're putting steel pans, a catch pan, under all dry cleaning equipment. They're using systems where you don't pour the dry cleaning fluid in the machine. You have a locked up kind of a system. The dry cleaners can explain that. All in an attempt to avert the problems that have happened in the past. Now, one of the things the DEQ and all of us struggle with is who put the PERC in the ground if there's a problem. The city of Lebanon is a perfect example. The whole water table under the city of Lebanon is contaminated, or a bloom of PERC is spreading in the water table. That's very dangerous because Lebanon is right next to the Fannie Ann River. Hypothetically, you get into the river. We're not sure what the level, and the federal levels, I've been told off that it's like putting one teaspoon of cleaning fluid into a swimming pool, and you violated the federal standard for how many billions parts per billion. The problem in Lebanon is to try to determine, is this caused by dry cleaners, or was it caused by dry cleaners in the past? Most of the places that could have or did probably, if it were their fault, contribute to it, are out of business. And this law doesn't cover sites that are the orphan sites that were mentioned by the woman from the DEQ, because you can't, you know, if the site has been abandoned, it's been turned into somebody else, you may not be able to trace back to what the ownership was. Many businesses historically have used PERC. PERC was used in automobile in the days of repair shops when service stations did lots of repair. PERC is something you can clean grease off with. And just Senator Miller might remember, there's this up at Burlingame, across the street from the Burlingame Grocers, is what used to be a Union Oil service station. Right next door to it is a dry cleaner. for 4 or 5 years, the DEQ had that dry cleaner identified as probably causing contamination, because when they were working on the site that used to be the service station, they found perk, and the first assumption was it ran downhill. Well, now it turns out it may actually have been the service station that put the perk in the ground, and therefore Union Oil of California be responsible for it and not the dry cleaner, but it's hard to differentiate where this came from. I think every dry cleaner in this room is trying very hard to abide by the law and want to sincerely clean it up. Our problems, and I want to just speak for a little bit about some of our problems in addressing this. By the way, there are five members, at least five members of the Dry Cleaner Advisory Committee in the audience, and all of them can talk about our rather tedious, lengthy meetings. If you think this committee here is boring, you ought to go to the Dry Cleaner Advisory Committee for a while. We deal with two state agencies. The first is the DEQ. I have a great deal of respect for the DEQ, but Senator Miller has already identified efficiency is not their byword, and I would not, if I had my druthers, I wouldn't have the DEQ cleaning up things, and they are in charge of the cleanup. If a problem is identified, it is beyond the power, unless the dry cleaner wants to pay for it himself. But if this fund is going to be utilized, the dry cleaning, the Department of Environmental Quality contracts with one of three identified or qualified cleanup people, and they simply rotate. And when your turn comes, you're in charge of cleaning this particular site up. A lot of dry cleaners will tell you they're very frustrated. We've spent months, years in some cases, doing in-depth $50,000 on occasion research as to who's got a problem, and it seems like forever to try to get the thing cleaned up. There are those that will tell you that if the industry itself could do that and then go back to the fund, it would probably be more efficient. But that's something you'd have to work out and the DEQ would have to accept. The other agency involved in this is the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue is the one that collects the $1,000 per dry cleaner, and the dry stores, incidentally, are exactly as your committee administrator has identified. They are places where dry cleaners have a pickup and a delivery site, but they don't do dry cleaning on that site. The Department of Revenue are very pleasant people to deal with, and they're just like prisoners of war. They'll give you their name, rank, and serial number and no other information, because the first thing they'll tell you is we cannot tell you what we found out in looking at somebody's tax return. So we've spent endless meetings talking to the Department of Revenue about, well, now how do we get a better compliance with the law? We can't, they won't give us the numbers of people that are not doing it. And frankly, if they're collecting from 350 businesses in the state, they don't have the time to do the kind of audit that we'd like them to make sure it gets collected. And make no mistake about it, I said, I think all the dry cleaners in the room are very responsible. I think most of them are paying the tax. But there are several kinds of dry cleaners in the state. There are those that are absolutely convinced this law is unnecessary and doesn't apply to them because they don't have a spill on their property. At least one hasn't been identified yet. So if you're not under the gun of the DEQ, you'd rather not pay this increasing gallon wages, which is now up to $16.50 a gallon, and the raw material costs $6.50. Now, just that factor, it costs $6.50 for a gallon of perk, and the tax is $16.50 on its way to $21. Now, what would enter your mind if you had that kind of tax facing you? Well, maybe, just maybe, there's a way to buy it and not pay the tax. And I don't want to say anything to the two people in the agricultural business on this committee, but has it ever occurred to you that perhaps people would have farm diesel or farm gasoline on which they don't pay tax because it's used only off-road? On occasion, perhaps, might use some of that in an automobile. I mean, this situation is very similar to what's going on.
Sure, it would never happen. But it's
But we all know, and Senator Byers has been involved in the lengthy talks we've had about how we pay for our highway use, and if you're a trucker, you want a different kind of a tax. Well, the evasion's gone on, and we know time and again we've run into situations where we've seen gallonage sold in the state versus the tax paid, and the figures don't come close to matching. And we've even had, and we know that there have been people on the black market out there who have gotten perk. You can buy perk right now. You can go to a petroleum dealer and buy PERC. If you're not a dry cleaner, you can buy as much as you want and I'll pay the tax on it. There is no real policing of this. Now, the problem has been, how do we pay for this? The two bills you have in front of you are two approaches to how to continue to fund this program, and I think that most of the dry cleaners in the room agree we need to continue the program. We need to find a way to do it. I would make two observations that deal with the two bills. Number one, the suggestion is that we have the 2% gross receipts tax. You're dealing with a business that is at least 35 to 40% cash transaction. The Department of Revenue, and I would suggest you talk to Jim Brown, and I talked to him, who's the Assistant Director of the Department of Revenue, really will tell you they have no way of monitoring your business or anybody else's businesses in the state for gross receipts. We don't have, as other states do, a sales tax and a monitoring device set up to try to measure the total receipts of a company. And the fertile minds are already at work as to figure out how, if we had a 2% tax, how we could avoid it. Now, maybe you can work something out. The other thing you have to understand is this is, in fact, an insurance policy. And just as we are charged automobile insurance, whether we have $1 million income or $10,000 a year income, we usually pay about the same in the way of insurance because it's an insurance program. 1 gallon of PERC can be spilled by the biggest dry cleaner in the state or the smallest, and it results in exactly the same kind of cleanup problem. So trying to measure it by gross receipts or the size of a business is a difficult thing to ask. I don't think it's something the Department of Revenue can accomplish, and it also doesn't judge the real fact involved here is that you can cause a spill whether you're big or small, which is the suggestion of the Oregon Dry Cleaners on the other bill. I can't remember the number of either of them. You've got them in front of you. I think I covered the points I wanted to talk about. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and as I said, there are a number of dry cleaners on both sides of this particular funding issue who can give you all kinds of details about the business. Okay. Oh, the other kind of dry cleaner in the state, by the way, are the ones that wanted to repeal this law 2 years ago. There were about 2 dozen dry cleaners, mainly from the Portland area, who are relatively small dry cleaners. And I don't think the people in this room represent any of them, who simply they went to then-Representative Lonnie Roberts and said, we're not affected, repeal it. It's unfair. It's hard for us to do business.
Okay, very good. We're a little bit short for time here, so we're probably going to have to hurry on. We're going to have another hearing on this, I would say, at some point in time. So perhaps I can call some other witnesses here. James Kwong, Moon Dupac, Hang Su Yang, and Philip O. Please come forward. Welcome, gentlemen. Hope I pronounced your names reasonably close to right.
In the interest of saving time, I'd like to begin, even though...
Sure. Introduce yourself.
My name is James Kyung, K-Y-U-N-G, and I'm an attorney representing Korean American Dry Cleaning Association. And I'm here to testify today in support of Senate Bill 1253 and in opposition of Senate Bill 1089. I'd like to underscore what Mr. Roger Martin has testified in that I think by all accounts, most people in this room will agree, or at least the dry cleaners will agree, that this law has been a success. And that will be the testimony from DEQ as well as both associations. There are about 350 dry cleaners in the state of Oregon, and there are two associations representing about 65 to 70% of the dry cleaners. And 180 dry cleaners are a member of Korean American Dry Cleaner Association. About 45 to 60 represents the ODCA, or Oregon Dry Cleaner Association. I've emphasized to KDCA, or Korean American Dry Cleaner Association, that this issue about, you know, which collection method or proposal is not about, you know, Caucasians versus Koreans. This is about Oregonians, about dry cleaners, to increase the fund so that we can collect $1 million a year. Mr. Roger Martin has pointed out two powerful arguments, and that is, one, the 2% gross receipts method has a significant problem in that it gives people an incentive to cheat. And I think he mentioned that there are people already thinking about cheating. Well, I spoke with Mary Wall, and I spoke with Gina Cola, who is a manager at Fund Revenue, who is managing this particular law. And he said to me that under a 2% gross sales fee collection method, the DOR would hire one additional staff. And I spoke with him in this regard. There is incentive to cheat because you're collecting 2% on cash businesses. But there are 350 dry cleaners in Oregon, and it wouldn't take very long for a Department of Revenue to send one auditor out to audit at least a couple of dry cleaners to make sure they're paying their fees. And I believe Mary Wall, in my conversation with her, agreed that the administrative cost to collect wouldn't be very much. Mr. Roger Martin has also pointed out that this is an insurance policy like an automobile insurance policy, whether you're driving a $10,000 car or a $100,000 car, the liability, the benefit from having this insurance policy is the same. What he didn't tell you is that the dry cleaners, there are 350 dry cleaners, not every one of them have the same amount of pollution problem. He testified that they're dry cleaners whose shops are brand new. And I would imagine that there isn't any contamination there. Secondly, to have an equal premium or fee for all dry cleaners doesn't make sense. If you want to do it equitably, you got to say if there's more risk of contamination in your store, you got to pay more. But at this point, we don't know how many dry cleaning establishments are contaminated. The 2% gross sales came about because it's an easier way to measure and collect. And the underlying theory behind the 2% gross sales is that it's fair. If you're making $500,000 gross sales, you ought to be paying more than somebody who's making a $60,000 gross revenue a year. The additional benefit of charging 2% gross sales is that you don't limit the collection of $1 million. I think eventually you'll exceed $1 million collection annually because the population is growing. And I'd imagine that the inflation is going to increase, and there's going to be more, I'm sure, more gross revenue from dry cleaning industry. Mary Wall substitute today indicated that there isn't enough funds. Well, I've been on this dry cleaning advisory committee for the past 4 years, and I have not been told by any DEQ staff that we need X amount of dollars to clean up X amount of dry cleaning establishments. They have from day one has said to us $1 million is not enough. Well, as someone who's been involved with these associations, my concern is that we have this $1 million bar that we're trying to overcome, and we're here today to change the law so that we can collect $1 million. Well, the problem is, in my perception, as not as a dry cleaner, but as a third-party observer, you have these dry cleaners who are trying to butt their head against the wall to overcome this million. I would suggest to DEQ to find out how much money do we need, not today, not in a year, but over a period of time, so that the dry cleaners who 4 years ago have said, we'll take responsibility in cleanup by paying the funds. I don't think it's right that you to today say a state in a different state is paying $4,000 and here we're paying $2,000. That's like comparing apples and oranges. We don't know what the situation in Florida or somewhere else. We know that DEQ knows the circumstances and the cost of cleanups here in Oregon. So in summarizing my testimony today, I'd like the committee here today to consider the inherent unfairness in charging $3,000 or $4,000 to a small dry cleaner as opposed to charging $4,000 to somebody who is making $1 million a year. I'd like to see this program continue because it works. I have clients who buy and sell dry cleaning businesses. I have clients who apply for this fund. And even though they don't like paying money, and most of us don't like paying money for anything, but I think this law works. We need to change the law so that we can collect $1 million. In KADC, the KADC's position is that the 2% gross sales method is a fair and equitable method of collection of $1 million. Thank you.
Can you mention that position?
Mr. Park, who's to my left, is the president of the Korean American Grocery Association, and he just pointed out to me that under Senate Bill 1089, essentially it charges $1,000 per plant, $500 per drop source. It fixes the perk tax at $8, non-perk tax at $4, and any shortfall will be divided equally. And KDCA strongly opposes 1089 because it basically charges dry cleaners, small or large, about the same annual fee.
Anybody else wish to testify in this group?
My name is Philip Wu. I have one dry store and one dry cleaning store, and I'm vice president of KADCA. And I'm here to testimony why I oppose the Bill 1089. And first point I want to make is 1089 is a kind of blocking small business, keeping what they have been doing because of having them too much fee compared to their sales volume. There is a potential they may be driven out of the business. I think it's not good for the public because some people may like going to bigger cleaners, but some people may like small cleaners closer to their house. And many small cleaners may be serviced by themselves, not afford to hire employees trying to compete with the service. I think that's a risk for public. Second, I believe small dry cleaners, when we had the first meeting about this revision of the collection system, UDCA came about $3,000 equally divided the fee $1 million among the dry cleaners. And I heard a lot of small dry cleaner owners are crying that they cannot just simply afford it.
Alright, no problem.
I heard some members, you know, are crying. I cannot even afford to go to my dentist when I'm teeth is hurting so much. I cannot forget that kind of hearing. And honestly, I'll be paying more even if I change it to 2% like that. Then 1089, but I support a fair way so bigger cleaners should pay more. Because of those small guys, we have to consider too. Because in our system, we have to protect, also we have to obligation to protect, to our right to survive, which is not about greed. Our the reason I oppose 1089 is about the is about our obligation. It's not about the it's against the greed because I think 1089 we're just trying to block the competition from the small guys, and also try to make more money, because reducing their share of tax or fee payment, and that's why I opposed to it.
Thank you very much. So, that's testimony pretty much in line with that. And
I said two more.
Two more?
I have one of the vice presidents.
Sure.
That's vice
president. We do have a... If we can limit to about a minute of testimony from each person, would that be fine?
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes. 5 minutes? Okay. You've come this far, you can have 5 minutes.
I'm no English.
Please introduce yourself.
Yeah. 1992에 아메리카에 이민을 왔어요.
This is Mr. Yang. He's also with the KADCA, and he immigrated to the United States in 1992.
대학교에서 1996에 현재 오레곤의 비버튼에 소재하는 트레이너를 운영하고 있습니다.
After
England.
After 6 years of working in other for other dry cleaners, he finally opened his own shop a couple of years ago in Beaverton.
Yes. 현재 이 법안이 모든 클린에 인수능수가 될 수 있는 이유가 없다는 것을 저는 이야기하고 나왔습니다.
He wants to talk about how the current laws are not really insuring the dry cleaners in the true sense of what you would think of as an insurance policy.
SB1089가 인수런스라고 한다면은
Tell me.
우리는 인수런스 팔라시 안에서 안전하게 상업에 보장을 받아야 하기 때문입니다.
And the reason that he doesn't think it's a true insurance policy is because even if some cleanup is done, he's afraid that they could be, essentially, if they're leasing their property from a landlord, the landlord could kick them out, and then they would be stuck basically with nothing to do. So he's afraid that their well-being is at risk.
SB1089는 이 법안이 모든 클리너스의 인수를 될 수 없다는 두 번째 이유입니다.
And here's another reason why he's opposing the SB1089.
랜드로드가 클리너를 동시에 운영하는 경우 10년 전에 오염이 크게 문제가 되지 않았을 때 마구 버려져 오던 오염 물질이
어디 저기 오케이. If here's a large-scale dry cleaner that owned their own land, okay, and for the past 10 years there hadn't been any problem as far as a spill or a cleanup or anything like that.
Okay, so. 오레곤에서 운영되는 몇 개 안 되는 공장 중의 대규모 클리너는 자기가 자기 부지에서 클리너를 운영하는 것으로 예상됩니다. 됐어요? 그 외에 다수의 모든 클리너는 렌트비를 지불하고 남의 부지에서 클리너업을 운영하는 다수의 클리너들입니다.
The large cleaners that own their own property, if there was a cleanup that the DEQ stepped in and helped them out with, they would basically be covered. Except for a few cleaners, the majority are small mom-and-pop type dry cleaners. And again, he's reiterating that he could be kicked out from his store if there's a problem, even though it was fixed, even though the EQ came in and the cleanup fixed.
예를 들어 의원 여러분들이 밴드를 오더라면은 저 같은 클리너에게 밴드를 세탁소를 빌려줄 수 있겠습니까?
He's asking if you put yourself in the shoes of a landlord that owned a store, would you feel comfortable in renting your space to him as a dry cleaner if you knew about the potential dangers of that the spill could occur?
우리는 우리의 비즈니스를 안전하게 운영할 수 있는 인수력 팔라스가 필요합니다.
He says that they an insurance policy that will allow them to safely operate their business.
기획에서는 1년에 약 1,000,000의 예상 금액으로는 국토세 오염의 부지만 청소할 뿐이지.
He thinks the $1 million a year fund for cleaning up the environment would be limited in terms of what it could accomplish.
모든 클리너가 자기 비즈니스의 문제점을 즉시 해결할 수 있는 정식 인수런스가 저희는 필요합니다.
And he thinks that it's necessary to find a type of insurance that would fairly distribute the cost in order to
오염 문제에서 해방이 돼 랜드로드와 오너가 드라이 클리너 오너와의 좋은 관계가 유지돼서 계속 우리의 영업을 하고 싶습니다.
And he wants to find something that will allow a good relationship between the landlords. Most of these people don't own their own, they're renting. Between the people dry cleaning stores and their landlords, so they can keep a good relationship.
우리는 그간 3,000불 한도에 택스만 내면은 모든 오염에서 해방이 되는 줄 알았어요. 우리는 1년에 3,000불의 택스만 내면은 오염에서 해방이 되는 거죠.
If he pays the $3,000 a year right now, then he is relieved of any problem of cleanup. But,
yeah.
However,
EQ는 오염 장소에 클린을 목적으로 하는 단체가 아닙니다.
But the DEQ is not a body that, I'm not sure exactly what he means, but the purpose of the DEQ is not as a cleanup body. I'm not sure exactly what he means.
DEQ는 콜센터에 있는 지하수 오염, 그 실태와, 또는 솔벤트가 왜 우리에게 나쁜가를 교육하고 홍보해야 된다.
He thinks the DEQ should also help educate them more about the use of proper use of solvents.
우리로 하여금 1년에 1회라도 DEQ에서 정기적인 교육으로 오염을 방지할 수 있는 교육을 시켜주시기 바랍니다. 이상입니다.
And he hopes that there will be some programs set up so that each year they'll have some kind of continuing education on the proper use of solvents, etc. And that's just it.
Okay, well, what we're probably going to do is to eventually we're going to set up a work group and we can bring some of these issues and concerns. And so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. My name is Mundo Pat. I'm a 99KADCA person. I come from Korea 1978 to Astoria. So 21 years I stayed in Oregon. I'm Oregonian. So I'm used to rain already. And then my two sons, go to the University of Oregon. I'm the senior one, is a sophomore. And then, but still, my English is still baby.
Yeah.
So sometime Mr. Nazareth, Tony, going to help me too, okay? So I'm speaking English, Korean, both ways, but please you understand. This time I want to thank you, give the opportunity to tell and testify in front of the leaders in the Oregon who are going to keep clean, making green Oregon and clean the waters, air. That's why I live in here. Because of I traveled whole world, because of I was a seaman. I'm graduate merchant marine college in Korea, and then I spent 11 years of seaman's life. And last 2.5 years, I was a very, very young captain. I was so smart boy at the time. But now it's so old, you're right. But I traveled 63 countries in the world, but I found the best place in the world here, Oregon. That's why I migrated to here. But it's not easy to keep, my liking, to get money, is enough very to keep my family. And so, but still I have only one small dry clinic in the Clackamas County. But very, upset me because of, $1,000 we have to pay equally, that load is still not unfair. But I understand that, currently, enough, they say, clean up the contaminated dry cleaner site. For some 잘못된 것은 돈을 그 뭐라 그럴까 마련하는 방법에서 평등하지 않다는 것입니다.
Basically, he agrees that there is need to change the collection system, but it needs to be done fairly so that the small guy is not paying excessively.
그래서 우리 그 KDC의 그 아주 그 essential point는요.
So the main points that the KADCA wants to make are.
그래서 법은 만민에게 평등해야 합니다.
To make the law fair.
그리고 그런 원칙에 의해서 모든 사람이 아주 공평하고 평등하고 최소한도 어떤 그런 그 다수에 의해서 그런 법을 우리는 요구하고 있고 그 법 안에서 우리는 혜택을 갖고 살아나가고 있습니다.
They want, basically he's just reiterating that the law needs to be fair so that there aren't any, nobody's getting away with any special favors and that everything is divided up equally.
내가 오늘 그 우리 KDC 안을 설명하기 전에 잠깐 할 얘기가 있는데 우리 그 KDC에는 지금까지 5번의 프로포저를 경쟁해 왔습니다.
He said that up until this point, the KADCA had come up with 5 different proposals to try and rectify the collection system.
Last year, 나는 그 special committee chairman 했습니다.
He was the chairman for the special committee last year.
And then I heard about the $3,000, and then KADCA made a special committee, and then 우리는 그 10월 14일 날,
October 14.
14. 어떤 법을 하나 처음에 만들었냐 하면은, 포크 오염은 포크에 의해서 오염되기 때문에 포크를 많이 쓰는 사람이 택스를 또는 수위를 많이 내야 된다라는 기준으로 잡았습니다.
One of the proposals they came up with is for people who use more perk than the next guy should bear more of the burden than those using small quantities.
그때 다음에 그때에 우리가 만든 법이 60개론까지는 1,000불, 120개론까지 쓰는 데는 2,000불, 180개론까지 쓰는 데는 60개론.
You have some proposals anyway. But where this is going to go, we're going to set up a work group, and I think maybe instead of getting into the actual details of what you're proposing at this meeting, when we get a work group together, that you can guide us. We're a little bit short of time.
5번의 그런 그 문제를 통해서 우리가 DEP하고 매번마다 상의를 했었습니다.
And they had they went round 4 or 5 times with the DEQ proposing this and proposing that.
그럴 때마다 DEQ는 뭐라고 얘기하냐면 ODC하고 KDC가 한 안을 만들으라고 그랬습니다.
And basically the response from DEQ was there should be some kind of joint proposal from AADCA and the Oregon Dry Cleaners Association because they were hearing different, you know, different strains of what should be done.
그래서 작년에 이번과 같은 것이 2%가 만들었었는데도 금년에 와서 또 바뀌었고 또 금년에 들어와서도 제가 그 우리의 안이 있지만 스티브 영, ODCA 회장 스티브 영하고 about two and a half months, about three months를 계속 터치하면서 하나는 만들려고 무지하게 많이 노력했습니다.
And they worked for several months between the ODCA and KADCA to come up with a proposal.
마지막으로 우리가 그 한 안을 만들기로 스티브 영 ODCA 프레지던트하고 합의를 봤었습니다.
And then they finally reached an agreement with Steve Young of ODCA for a proposal.
그래서 3월 19일 날
And then on March
19th 우리 변호사인 제임스 영 변호사에서 만나서
They met with James Young, their lawyer.
And 서로 의견을 나누고 여기껏 얘기하는 것을 서로 사인하자고 했습니다.
And they came, they basically came to an agreement.
여기에 그 서류가 있는데 이렇게 만들어 가지고 가서 갔는데 18일 날도 만나서 스티브 영이 저한테 이대로 하자고 우리 결의 이대로 하자고 했는데 19일 날 만나서 이것을 폐기시켰습니다.
And
아무 어떤 노티스 없이.
They reached an agreement with Steve Young, but for some reason it was rejected very soon thereafter.
Well, why don't we? We're going to have an opportunity for you folks to meet together. So instead of explaining all this to us, why don't we just end this testimony and then we'll go on and we will set up a work group so that you folks can get together and we can talk about these proposals and see if we can come to some agreement. You're opposed to 1089, I understand that.
Yes. 그렇기 때문에 우리 그 KADCA의 독자적인 안을 내지 못했습니다. 독자적인 우리가 우리가 스스로 센터비를 만들지 못한 이유가 그 시간을 놓치기 때문입니다.
And so the reason they couldn't really come up with a proposal is because they spent a lot of time in the past but the didn't want they rejected their offer.
그럼 지금은 지금부터 우리 KADCA를 잠깐 설명해 드리겠습니다.
지금 시간 많이
금방에.
He just wants to show briefly about the
two percent로 하고
2% of those sales.
120,000 per year. This is approximately for minimum low average. One for one dry cleaning.
Okay. Can you all see this?
Yeah, we can see it. And actually, if you want to leave that with us, we could use it as part of this group.
So, maybe 2%로 하고, Protector 4불로 하고, Other Serpent 2불로 하고.
Pardon me for a second. It's time for us to end this testimony because we've got other people here. And you'll have another opportunity. You have an opportunity to do this. We're not going to move this bill or do anything with it today.
I want to give this all the documents for the...
Please, if you could. Yes. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it.
Steve Young, Steve Mitchell, Gary Campbell, Steve Walden, and Earl Ekstrom.
Welcome, gentlemen. You can see that we're going to have more meetings on this.
Right.
We'll just make your
we'll try to make our points as fast as we can. My name is Steve Young, Chairman, and I am the author of the original bill. I picked it up and took it through with some help of great people on both sides of this issue we have today. We had Korean and ODCA and Koreans involved. And we passed this in 1995, and in concurrence with everybody else in the room, I do believe we all think it's a good deal for dry cleaners. We want to maintain this law. The only real problem we have is the funding. on page 13 of that blue booklet that the DEQ passed out, I'm also on the advisory board of this lie, as is Steve Mitchell and Gary Campbell, with James Kuhn, etc. If you'll, there's a bunch of dry cleaners listed there. I believe it's 13. But the number of employees is four and a half, on Classic, is 4.5 employees, Hayden Island, 5 employees, Peacock, 4 employees, Cox is 12 employees, Moore's, 4 employees, Tommy's, 2 employees. Now, if you'll take a look at what Tommy's is going to cost with 2 employees, there is no bearing on the cost of cleanup from dry cleaner to dry cleaner that you can determine by the number, by the size of the store. It's a totally a geologic problem. If you happen to be sitting over an underground river or aquifer, then that is where the cost increase. If you happen, in the case of this Johnny, it was sitting on a granite teacup, and they just sucked it out, and it was cheap. So, being a fact, I believe that there is no, and we at the OGCA believe that there is no size of the operation cost to clean up comparison. Therefore, our original proposal is 350 dry cleaner charges each $3,000, and we'll go to work and clean your clothes. And then that was totally objected to. But we realized that we need to roughly raise $3,000 a store. And the way we came to that is, in order for us to all have immunity from lawsuits, the best deal we could strike with the state in 1995 is that we promised we'd raise $1 million. Now, you know now that it's $16.50 a gallon tax on a $6 product, and in October it'll be $21.50. Those are round numbers. It's actually $16.65. Anyway, a 55-gallon drum, which fits neatly into a small minivan, has better than a $1,000 bounty on it. You can buy it in Vancouver. You can buy it across any border without the $1,000 bounty. And I really believe that since this has grown at the $4 a year increment, I think honest people have done dishonest things. And it's pretty hard not to when you're running a small business, make $1,000 in an afternoon. I therefore believe that we've got to share. This is a liability insurance. It's nothing more. If you're driving a $100 beer or if you're driving a Rolls Royce, your liability insurance is actually the same. But you're comprehensive, you get an end of deal. Comes up. Any questions?
I think we have the idea. So what I really would like to do is to set up a work group here, and we're talking with Gary, and I think that's possible. And I would like to just make a direction that you folks get together. Sherry has some directions. We talked about it. She has an idea which way to go. We've got a meeting set up for the 16th on Friday at 3:30 p.m. Definitely have something that we set up. And that's this
Friday?
That's this Friday, yeah. This Friday.
Day after tomorrow.
Okay. 3:30. And if you'll contact Sherry after this meeting, you can tell me when or where anyway, and then we can move this process along. Because it looks like this is a good idea.
We would all like to get along together. And everybody has a different two cents to throw on top of it. It should be pretty darn simple. The DOR should be able to collect their money. We should be able to go on with our lives. But I don't think we need 88 cents for this law. We just need to fund it and get down the basics of funding.
Okay, well, what I'd like to do is you folks come together to some sort of agreement so you come in and say, we agree upon this, because if you don't, we're going to say it one way or the other if we do something, and so try and make yourself as happy as possible.
May I make one more point? If this goes 2% dry cleaning, one could separate their dry cleaning machine, their one employee who does the dry cleaning salary, and lease him 10% of the building space, and all of a sudden a store that does $1 million, only a $100,000 store, 2% of the growth, the other business would be fabric restoration. And that would be depressing. I mean, it's that simple, and it only costs $350 to start another corporation.
What you need to do is come to some sort of agreement here, and we can just proceed. Sir, did you have... Please introduce yourself.
Sorry, these gentlemen here...
Please introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Steve Mitchell. I'm from Ashland, Oregon. I'm a dry cleaner in that area, and these gentlemen are all for 1089, and I was in opposition of it, supporting the opposite bill, 1263. And I just wanted to make a quick point. I'll be very brief, if you'll allow me. And I'll come back fresh also. I'm a member of the Oregon Dry Cleaners Association. I'm a past president, and I'm now still on the executive board. And I wanted to just read the objectives of our association, and there's just four little points here. To elevate the standards of the dry cleaning industry, not individuals, the industry, to promote the interests of Oregon Dry Cleaners Association members, to bring about a spirit of cooperation among all dry cleaners, to extend opportunities to dry cleaners for education along the lines of industrial, scientific, and vocational activities. My concern is the large dry cleaners, the small dry cleaners, and the fairness issue. That's the whole issue. The first issue is to raise the money, to do it fairly. The percentage would absolutely do it for the little guy. Right now, last year, I paid like $3,600 in fees and taxes. If it would have been on a percentage, it would have been over $7,000. That would have been more fair. Thank you.
Okay, I appreciate it. I think you guys can work this out amongst yourselves a lot better than this committee could. So that's your charge. You guys figure this out.
You can start today, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, if you want to start today, if you're here, if you want to meet, then...
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we would be... are you, Sherry, going to kind of moderate here for...
Mr. Chair had announced that we are going to have a work session meeting. That's this Friday, the day after tomorrow, at 3:30. The committee will have a meeting from 1 to 3, so that gives me a little bit of time. Don't know where it's going to be. I have to find a room. Anybody who's interested is welcome to participate. And the plan is for, the chair has provided some direction. We're going to put a proposal on the table for you to look at. Obviously, no one here in the committee has a particular interest. And if the proposal is not to your liking, we can see if we can hash it out there. We're going to take an hour, no more than an hour, Friday afternoon to work on it. And whatever we can agree, great. And if not, then the committee will face the tough choice of pick one or the other or do nothing. And that's basically the game plan. So at this point, I think the chair is closing this hearing, and we need to conduct a hearing on two other bills, and we've negotiated another 10 minutes or so from the next committee so we can go ahead and get a couple bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Close the public hearing on 1089 and 1263. Open up the public hearing on 938. Peter Bragdon. Welcome, sir. Sure, just add it to the... Okay, no problem. Welcome. Introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Peter Bragdon, and I'm an attorney with Stoll Reeves in Portland, and I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Oregon State Bar's Business Law Section. which has about 1,100 members from around the state with a variety of practices. And I chair the legislative committee of the business law section, and we up the draft Senate Bill 938, which provides for electronic proxy voting by shareholders in Oregon corporations.
Okay.
So I was hoping to, I know you have, don't have much time on to get some written remarks, so I want to just very quickly sure. tell you why we're supporting the bill. In essence, what it does is it provides for electronic voting by shareholders in Oregon. Under Oregon law, many shareholders already vote by proxy, and traditionally that's been on a piece of paper that's sent through the mail to and from the corporation. And increasingly around the country, what we see is corporations accepting votes by electronic means, and we see states adopting legislation that explicitly permits that, particularly over the Internet or telephone. And that's what our bill does. It explicitly allows Internet, telephone, or facsimile voting. So we have some basic goals with our bill. One is to provide provide to Oregon corporations and their shareholders what's available to shareholders and corporations in other states, particularly states that are home to a number of corporations, such as Delaware and California. And in fact, a number of Oregonians are already voting over the Internet when they're voting on matters with those companies. The other thing is to provide some clarity in the law. One reason a lot of us got interested in this is we were being asked by our clients whether they could accept votes over the Internet. And I think the answer under Oregon law right now is either no or maybe. It's not prohibited, but it's not explicitly allowed. We also think there would be some cost savings for corporations and therefore indirectly to shareholders in terms of cost of printing, mailing, or processing shareholder votes. And last but certainly not least is we think it's a way to encourage shareholder participation in corporate governance by creating an alternative and convenient means for participating. And it also allows people to participate really up to the last minute almost in some shareholder matters. And of course it wouldn't replace the ability to vote by a paper proxy or to attend a meeting and vote there, but it would just be an alternative means. So those are basic reasons. We've not heard any opposition to our bill. Nobody's contacted us with opposition to it. We've gotten some technical comments to it, which I passed along to the staff of the committee. I'd be glad to talk through those or take any questions. Or
no, it's not necessary. I see maybe you want to make a change, but what I would recommend is we pass the bill out as it is and get through the House, and if there are some changes, we can. It looks like they're just the definitional type
thing. Really technical.
Not a substance to the bill, and so I think it's a matter of time that that would be the best thing to do.
That would be great.
For the question, close the public hearing on 9:38. Open up a work session on 9:38. Chair would move 9:38 to the floor of the Senate. The do pass recommendation. Any comments? Objections? So ordered. Chair will carry.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We'll work on those amendments on the House side. Okay, open up the hearing on Senate Bill 490. Who has signed up to testify right now? Okay, Kyle. Oh my gosh. Let's see the, let's see. Got there. Dave. Very, yeah. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members Gary Carlson with Associated Oregon Industries. To my right is Dave Canary, a member of AOI's Tax Committee, and represents our members often in various tax appeals and litigation. And this issue arises from that area of expertise that he has, and to save on time, I'm simply going to tell you that we're bringing this bill to you to try to clarify the law with regard to real estate licensure law and federal licensure law so that our members can continue to get the best available expert witnesses on their behalf if they enter into a property tax appeal situation. Mr. Carey can, I think, expand on this a bit for you, and then Scott Taylor, the real estate commissioner, is here to comment also about the Dash 2, which we all now agree will deal with this problem in an acceptable way, I think, all parties concerned.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Kinnear. I'm an attorney with Garvey, Schubert, and Bear, and as Mr. Carlson has already related, my expertise is in state tax litigation. On the second page of my prepared testimony, you'll see in bold the language of ORS 696-010-12, which requires anyone who represents a taxpayer or gives an opinion in a property tax litigation case to be licensed by the real estate agency. I think more in terms of ambiguity of statute than intent, this creates a real problem because there are expert witnesses, Mr. Carlson mentioned, who give an opinion and who also represent taxpayers who not necessarily need to be licensed by the real estate agency. In fact, this is in conflict with several other statutes which prescribe who can represent taxpayers and who can give opinions. I believe that the real estate agency simply wants to clarify the statute as we do to say that people who are licensed as brokers, that the real estate agency would still be allowed to regulate them. I don't believe the real estate agency has the interest in trying to regulate who can represent a taxpayer or who can give an opinion. And I believe we've arrived at a solution to the problem that will clarify the statute, which will then give the intent to the words that I think we all have agreed was the intent a long time ago. And I'll turn it over to the real estate agency to give their opinion and their testimony.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Scott Taylor. I'm the Oregon Real Estate Commissioner. The dash twos that you have before you, we can support. We think that better accomplishes the intent of the proposal as it was first set out. I can reiterate that the agency has no interest in asserting jurisdiction over those who may proceed in tax proceedings who are not licensed under ORS 696. There's some vagueness in the statute today, and we think this helps resolve it.
Thank you. Any questions? Any further? You have any further comments? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 490, open up a work session. The chair would move the dash to amendments. To the bill, or any comments, any objections? So ordered. And the chair would also move Senate Bill 490 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? So ordered. Carrier.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Staying over. All
right.
Well, yeah.